Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PD Digest tonight. Should be an awesome show. I talked about it. We did not have a show last weekend at all, as some of us was busy and was unable to come on. But we're on tonight, and we have a full panelist tonight, as we have Kyle, Joseph, Glenn, and myself, Brett, and it should be a fun one. And first of all, you know, it's been 2 weeks since we all talked. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing pretty good.
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing? I miss you, losers.
I miss all you guys, man.
No, we can't do this week. I hate this anymore. It's not working. We need to keep going every single week.
Yeah, we really do, don't we? Well, I guess we can get started then. Our first deal of discussion tonight, as I get my topics up here on the channel iPad. So our first topic is going to be over in the ARCA Racing Series. This weekend they return to the Chicagoland Speedway. Currently, several drivers on this weekend's entry list include James Swanson, number zero car, Thomas Craig in the two, John Honey in the number three. John Westcalley will drive the number 15 with Bill Campiana in car 18, and Austin himself will drive the number 22, Spencer Gallagher in 23, Justin Boffman in the number 25, Brad Smith will return to the number 48 car, Andrew Ranger will drive the number 53, Cody Coughlin will be driving the number 55 of Leon Muntner in car 66. Tom Hessert will be in car 77, Justin Allison in car 88, Brandon Finger in car 90, and Mason Mitchell will be in the number 98 car with Wayne Pearson in the double zero, and Mike Aplanado, I guess that's how you say it, will be in the number 03, and should be an interesting.
What car are you going to be in?
I am not going to be in a car.
Why not? We need to get you your ARCA license. You already have the rule.
I don't even have my driver's license.
You do? You don't.
I don't.
Oh, we got to get you one. We could go on a road trip, Kyle, you and I. You know what, Glenn, you could come along too.
We might all get arrested. So,
no.
Alright, so I'm going to put Kyle on the spot here. Kyle is our ARCA geek, I guess I could say it. And just talk a little bit about this race this weekend and who you think is going to come out on top. But don't give your pick, though. You know, save that.
All right, I won't. All right, I'll wait till the end of the show. But, I mean, I'm looking at probably the Ford guys, you know, Justin Allison, Grant Finger, Mason Mitchell. I think you might see one of those three guys when they all have a good shot. Also, you know, it's Venerini's backyard, Chicago Land, since they're based out of that area. You know, and they have John West Townley, Justin Boston, who nearly won the race last year, just running out of gas at the coming to the white flag. And also, you know, Cody Coughlin trying to get some more experience. Also, Leilani Munter is back this week. And I think the last race she ran was Talladega, so she's back. You know, but there's so many names out there. And one that I'm going to bring up, there's a few actually more I'm going to bring up. You know, Matt Tift has done a decent job, you know, on the Super Speedway, made his Super Speedway debut at Pocono in June, had a good run going until a little skirmish with Justin Boston late in the race. And out of all those drivers, I think to me the one that stands out the most that caught my eye was Andrew Ranger. You know, ARCA has this thing they run every year. It's called the Bill France 4. They run at four different tracks. They're running at New Jersey Motorsports Park, which that was in May, Chicagoland Speedway, which will be, of course, this weekend, Berlin Raceway in August. That's Johnny Benson's track. And also the DuCoin State Fairgrounds on Labor Day weekend. So I don't know. I think this is kind of interesting. You know, Andrew Ranger had run ARCA at Chicagoland before back in 2011. He actually finished fifth in that race. So, and actually, it's his worst finish ever, was fifth in the ARCA series. So, you know, I think, you know, he likes that these type of cars. I mean, I think he ran that race at DuCoin about a couple of years back as well, and he finished fifth in that race as well. So, you know, I think Andrew Ranger has a decent chance this weekend, honestly. You know, I know he's mainly a road racer. And actually, he's leading the Bill France Force Crown standings going into Chicagoland because he won at New Jersey Motorsports Park where he made it four in a row there. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch, and I'm pretty sure that's a Dodge that he's running. So I think it's going to be an interesting race this weekend, but I'm actually going to make a kind of a bold statement here. I think with ARC, I think Mason Mitchell is going to win here the next 3 weeks.
I agree with you. He's been flat out outstanding lately, and he needs that little bit of luck that he's missing. And with the results that he's had, he's going to be winning. And I think it's going to come on the intermediate track for sure.
Yeah, when he starts.
You were with me at Pocono. You saw how great he was there.
He almost
caught Kyle Larson.
I know. I couldn't believe it. But, you know, I think once Mason Mitchell starts winning, he's going to win a lot.
Yeah, especially just like all these other drivers. They start out mediocre, and as they get going, once you get that one win, you're able to get a ton of them. I think you're going to see that not just from Mason Mitchell, but you're going to see that from Justin Blossom as well soon.
You know, and one more thing I want to add is with Mason Mitchell is pretty much, this has been stemming from last year, like the second half. Since he left the Rulo brothers, he actually had a pretty strong end of the year. He finished runner-up in both the last two races at Kentucky and Kansas. And, you know, since going to his own team, I mean, they've been flourishing so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, he's just right now, he needs to finish races. If he can finish races inside the top five, contending for the lead, guess what? He's going to victory lane, and he's going to win this championship. Because right now, you don't really have any veterans in the ARCA series besides Frank Kimmel, and he's not contending for wins this year like he did last year. And I think that's partially because that's how his team is. I mean, Wintron Racing, they're not a team that really wins races in their history.
I mean, I think they've had Wintron is just, I'm not sure what it is with Frank Kimmel. I mean, last year, I mean, of course, there's a difference, you know, with Thor Sport last year and with Wintron this year. And Wintron has won races in the past. I mean, I know they don't win frequently, but they have won Daytona before. I think both of their wins came with, actually three of their wins came with James Buescher, and it might be their only three. But I'm not entirely sure, and I am Matt Morrell as well. So, I mean,
they've been good over the years. They just haven't been exceptional. And it's questionable why Frank Kimmel made that move. And maybe it's because he wants to save money, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, with, you know, Mason Mingus last year, he had a couple chances to win a few races. Just, you know, he just had the luck. So, I think Frank Kimmel's probably overdue for a good run one of these weekends because, you know, we have Chicagoland this weekend. He's won there before. He's won at Lucas Oil Raceway. He's won at Pocono. So I'm going to be interested to see what happens here.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I think that part of it is because they have the truck team now. So that's kind of taken away from their ARCA series efforts.
All right. And our final ARCA topic is Grant Dinsinger will return to Chicagoland Speedway this weekend for the first time since 2011, I believe. And can he win, starting with Joseph? Joseph?
What'd you say? I couldn't hear you, Brett.
Grant Dinsinger will be making his return at Chicagoland Speedway for the first time since 2011, and my question to you is, can he win it?
I think he's not going to win it, but he's going to run a top five. That team is built for short track racing. They've done well at the intermediate tracks this year, but I don't see him winning it, even though he has run extremely well. I think the championship is going to come down to him and Mason Mitchell, but I also think that in order for that to happen, Grant Anthony just needs a little extra something on those intermediate tracks. And he has the horsepower because he's using Roush Sheets engine.
Paul? Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I kind of agree with Joseph. I don't think he's going to win. I mean, he's shown the speed. And since he ever came into ARCA, he was good on those mile-and-a-half tracks. I think he had a few runner-up finishes. And he has a runner-up finish at Chicagoland. He finished second in 2009, so I definitely think he has a chance, but I just don't think he's gonna. I don't think he's gonna win the race. But like I said, you know, he has a teammate this weekend in Justin Allison, so maybe they'll try to get some information off each other, and you know, and try to hopefully for either one of them to win the race.
All right, and our next set of topics is the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series took the Iowa Speedway this past weekend. And Harry Jones captured the victory in the 6th Annual American Ethanol 200 presented by Energen. And Jones led 131 laps of 200 total. And Ryan Blaney came in second. Finishing third was Matt Crafton. Fourth, Joey Coulter. Fifth, Ramon Quiroga. Sixth was Ben Kennedy. Seventh was Jeff Chiquette. 8th was Cole Custer, 9th Tyler Reddick, and 10th was Sean Hunter Nemechek. And the race lasted 1 hour, 35 minutes, and 5 seconds. The average speed was 110.429 miles per hour, and the margin of victory was 0.629 seconds. There was 4 cautions for 19 laps in the yellow, the first one being the number 70, and then on lap 56, another spin involving the number 23 over in turn number 2. Then we saw a multi-car accident on lap 63, which involved Timothy Peters and Ron Hunter Jr. And between those two guys, I'm sure neither one is going to be spending a Christmas party to one another this year. And then our final caution happened on lap 127 involving the number 12, of Eric Petto on the front straightaway. And our point standings, leaving the Iowa Speedway, which their next race is July 23rd, which is on a Wednesday, at the Illinois Speedway for the Mud Summer Classic. Matt Crafton currently goes in to the race as the points leader, and Ryan Blaney sits second, third Johnny Sauer, fourth from Montserrat, fifth, Ron Hornaday, sixth, Ben Kennedy, seventh, Timothy Peters, eighth, Taylor Wallace Jr., ninth, Joey Coulter, and tenth, Don Les Cowley. It was a very interesting race, and there was some post-race stuff that we'll get to that after we go over the race. And I'm going to start with Glenn this time, if he could give us his thoughts, please, on the race.
Well, the truck series race was rather interesting, and plus kind of tame as well. The first half of the race was dominated by Darrell Walls Jr., and then by the second half, Eric Jones just came to his own and was doing a great job. I mean, you know, I'm very happy for Eric Jones because, you know, it was another one of those Opportunity 300 races, which we all like. But dang it, can't that team celebrate a victory and not get slapped with another penalty? I mean, my God, this is two penalties in a row. Two penalties in a row, man.
Yeah, but the penalties are basically because Eric Phillips is having trouble adjusting to the new aero package the NASCAR gave. And he's not the only one. It's just that he's the only one getting caught. And unfortunately, Erik Jones got deducted a few points. But it's not like it really matters for him because neither driver is running for a championship. That 51 truck is clearly going to have an advantage come owner's point. And I don't think 10 points is really going to make a difference. And that $6,000 fine is nothing. But then the biggest thing is the probation for Ike Phillips until December 31st. If he has one more penalty with that 51 truck, guess what? He's getting suspended, and he's getting or at least a $20,000 fine, in my opinion.
We'll get into the penalty thing in just a second, but we're going to shift it over to Kyle now and give us his thoughts on the Iowa truck race. If he said, I know that he was pretty busy off of in Pocono for the IndyCar race, but did you see any highlights, Kyle, or tweets or anything about the race? And if so, or if you saw some of the highlights, kind of give us your thoughts.
Yeah, first I just want to correct you, Brett. The IndyCar race of Pocono was last weekend, and actually IndyCar was actually in Iowa with the Truck Series, so I was up in Loudoun for the Cup weekend. Unfortunately, my hotel did not have Fox Sports 1, so I couldn't see the race, the truck race. So I pretty much had to follow on Twitter, see what was going on. And, you know, I'm still like, you know, you guys are saying about the Erik Jones penalty. I'm still like, you know, I kind of, when I hear about Erik Phillips not adjusting, I hear about that, I understand that. You know, I just don't think it's good, though, that they keep getting these penalties. I mean, you know, I mean, Erik Jones did a good job, but, you know, it's hurting them. And I still think right now, you know, with the competition in the Truck Series, you know, I think Ryan Blaney is starting to come into his own. You know, he's only 2 points behind Matt Crafton. And, you know, he keeps racking up good finishes, and he's definitely going to be a threat for the championship. And, you know, and Thor Sport's been pretty consistent. You know, they've been having some struggles of late, which has kind of been hurting them. But I think with what they're doing that, I just don't know. I mean, I think Ryan Blaney's starting to get those finishes he needs. He's starting to finish races and getting the points he needs because, you know, he's heading into some good tracks. You know, he has Pocono coming up in a couple weeks. He has Michigan, another good track for just anybody. You know, it's pretty much a wild card, that race. Bristol, I mean, he has some good tracks coming up and, you know, and he can definitely win. He can get his first win of the year shortly and become the first non-Toyota driver to win a race. So, I mean, with Iowa, I mean, I'm guessing it was a pretty good race. I mean, it's unfortunate what happened. I think you said with Timothy Peters and Ron Hornaday, you know, kind of a tough hit for both of them. But still, I mean, I'm looking at the points here, and in the top eight are only separated by 37 points. So this is a pretty open championship right now. So, you know, and I want to also say, you know, I was looking at the finishing order, and for the second straight year, Jeff Choquette has gotten a top 10. So, you know, that stands out to me, and, you know, and a little bit of a shout-out for him.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he definitely pulled out a solid finish, and, you know, we're going to talk about one of our Nationwide students who, you know, kind of is in the same spot as Jeff Choquette. The over Nationwide Series, and you know, I thought the race at Iowa was pretty good myself, and it was certainly fun watching it on TV, and I thought it was a good race. And our next topic, I kind of wanted to save it, but Joseph kind of threw it out there, and also did Glenn. But the number 51 NASCAR Champion of the Truck Series team was penalized following an infraction at the Iowa Speedway during post-race. They violated sections 12-1, which we all know what that rule is, and then they also violated section 20B-12.8.1. Truck failed to meet post-race height requirements of the 2014 NASCAR Canada Truck Series rulebook. As a result of the infraction, Crew Chief Erik Phillips was fined $6,000 and placed on NASCAR probation until December 31st. In addition, driver Erik Jones has lost 10 championship driver points, and owner Kyle Busch has lost 10 championship owner points for this violation. And this is the second time, and actually they did for the second time in a row as well, where they were found in violation of the same penalty following the last two races. And, you know, as Joseph said, if they do this again, I'm sure they'll be getting a suspension. And I'm going to throw it over to starting with Kyle, and then I'm going to go to Glenn. Was the penalty fair? Or, I mean, I should say it like this. Was the penalty right for the situation for the second time they violated this?
Yeah, with the penalty, I think Joseph was talking about it a little bit earlier. You know, and I kind of, when I first heard it, I kind of scratched my head a little bit. You know, when I heard of it after Kentucky, you know, I didn't really understand the situation, like with the, how the penalty came. I mean, it's a little different, you know. I mean, I was reading some articles. They said, you know, with the first penalty, they didn't put Eric Phillips on probation. So, you know, he wouldn't be suspended this time, and the second time they did. So, I mean, I'm just wondering what would happen if it happened again. I mean, I know you guys were saying, you know, Eric Phillips will probably be suspended. I mean, that's a no-brainer right there because he's on probation. You know, because I know they lost 6 points at Kentucky and then they lost 10 points this weekend. But I think what I'm going to say is with the competition of that team, Kyle Busch Motorsports as a whole, I mean, yeah, this is a little setback, but right now, I mean, no one has been able to beat that 51 truck. Doesn't matter who is driving it, whether it's Eric Jones or Kyle Busch, they have been on their game lately. I mean, you know, when they don't fail post-race inspection, I mean, they're going to be fine, I think, honestly, you know, with the points and everything. You know, I mean, they did have the speed last year, but this year, Kyle Busch Motorsports, even with Darrell Wallace Jr., they've been probably one of the best organizations out there speed-wise. They've shown it in and out every single week.
Ben, do you have a copy?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Can you just give your thoughts about the Kyle Busch penalty?
Oh, well, I pretty much am shocked again that they get hit twice for the same issue and all that stuff. But, you know, they'll rally back, but, you know, down, that's a tough pill to swallow, especially in the truck series where, you know, 12 points can mean the difference between you being at the top of the heap and all of a sudden just dropping all the way down.
All right, now I think we are joined by Tim Despain, who actually hosts the Pit Stop, which is our sister show here on Black Talk Radio that airs on Tuesday nights. And Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Brett. Joseph, how y'all doing, my friends?
Joseph had to go for a little meeting over the phone, but we're joined by Kyle and Glenn, and you know, we were discussing about the Kyle Busch penalty this past weekend, and obviously, you know, this is the second time they violated it, and I don't know if you heard me ask the boys earlier, but you know, this is the second time they were busted for this for the second weekend in a row. You know, was you shocked about the penalty that was issued, that it was just pretty much added probation, but this time instead of a $5,000 fine, it was a $6,000 fine, and they also took 10 championship driver and owner points away from Eric Jones and Kyle Busch. So just talk a little bit about, you know, should have the penalty been more severe or less or whatnot?
Well, Brett, I think it was probably the right thing to do. You know, my good friend Kerry thought there, you know, it's happened 2 weeks in a row, and which, you know, I'm gonna take up for the drivers too. I mean, you know, everything has come to be so precise. Everything, you know, with all the things that NASCAR checks, everything that they do, and they're trying to make everything equal. And I will agree with the drivers. I mean, you know, you've got so much tolerance, and it's so much of a fine line that you have to get your car ready. But, you know, which this was a post-race infraction. But, I mean, you know, what are you going to do, Brett? I mean, you know, it's just, you know, dang if you do, dang if you don't. You know, you try to get that little bit of edge, and if it does cross that line, you know, you just get popped by NASCAR.
Yeah, I agree with that. And All right. Well, now we're going to move over into the NASCAR Nationwide Series, where they ran out loud in New Hampshire for the Stay Green 200, which was the 25th annual race of the event on Saturday. And Brad Keselowski won the event, driving the number 22 for Penske Racing in the Hertz Ford. And he led a total of 152 laps, which led over half of the race. And then he also led a total of four different times. Finishing in second was Kyle Busch. Third, Matt Kenseth. Fourth, Kyle Larson. Fifth was Chris Buescher with a good finish right there for him. Finishing sixth was Elliott Sadler. Seventh, Brian Scott, Trevor Bain. And tenth, Reagan Smith. And the race saw a total of six cautions for 27 laps under yellow. The time of race was 2 hours and 41 seconds. The average speed was 105.201 miles per hour, and the margin of victory was 1.880 seconds. And there was six cautions for 27 laps under yellow. As I said earlier, the first caution that happened on lap six involving Trevor Bain in turn number two. And, you know, actually that started with another car. I forgot who it was, but it was an unfortunate day for him. I think it was from Dylan Kwasniewski. And then on lap 14, we saw our second yellow for the number 40 stalling on the back straightaway. On lap 93, we saw a caution again for debris in turn number one. On lap 103, was thrown out for debris on the front straightaway. And on lap 108 involved the number two of Brian Scott, the number five of, I believe it was Casey Kane, the number 11 of Elliott Sadler, the number 23, the number 33 of Pominard, the 43 of the Dakota Armstrong, and the number 99 of James Buescher. And that one was a pretty nasty accident. And then from there on, we saw a narrow caution for debris on lap 141, and the race went on to the checkered. There was eight lead changes among four different drivers, and the top 10 drivers and the point standings following New Hampshire and heading into the Chicagoland Speedway this weekend include Reagan Smith, who has 611 total points. Sadler rides second with 603. Chase Elliott rides third with 598. Ty Dillon rides fourth with 577. And Brian Scott rides fifth with 560. Rest of the top ten include Trevor Bain in sixth, seventh, Brennan Gaughan, eighth, Chris Buescher, ninth, James Buescher, and tenth, Brian Reed. So I'm going to start with Kyle this time. What did you think of the Nationwide race as you were there?
I mean, I thought it was okay, the racing. I didn't think it was fantastic. You know, it was pretty much, it was Keselowski and Busch most of the race, you know. You know, it seemed like Kyle Busch was good early on, the drop of the green flag, he was pretty good. But, you know, after that, after they ran about 35 laps, Brad Keselowski reeled him right in. And then, you know, it was pretty much Brad had the car on the day. You know, even though Kyle Larson led for a little bit, didn't really matter because it was, like I said, it was a 22 and a 54. You know, and pretty much toward the end there in that race, you know, you saw the, if any of you saw the race, the 54 started reeling with 22, but I think that was because of lap traffic, really, because, you know, Kyle Busch is just a little better. Because Kyle even said himself in the post-race press conference that he didn't really have anything for Brad Keselowski, so... you know, so I guess, you know, it's been those two cars most of the year, you know. It was the same thing last year, you know. You had, didn't matter who was in, you know, with Busch in the 54 and then whoever was in the 22, it was pretty much each and every week, you know, the same two teams going for the owner's title. But I think for me, though, the thing that surprised me a lot was probably Chris Buescher. I mean, he finished fifth, but he actually stayed out on that last caution to get the lead. Of course, he lost to Keselowski in the next lap, but he actually stayed in, you know, he had enough fuel. I think he went 90 or 91 laps on that last tank of gas, and he finished fifth. So just a quick shout-out to him because, you know, he's the highest finishing rookie, And you know, with him finishing as high as he did, he's eligible for the $100,000 dash for cash at Chicagoland this weekend.
Tim?
Okay. If I can I change the subject, Britt? I know y'all got something going. Have y'all talked about the Joey Logano? My mind just left. The Joey Logano incident with hit me out. I got too many
Morgan
things
Shepherd?
On my mind.
Morgan Shepherd.
Morgan Shepherd. Yes, Morgan Shepherd.
We go in order with our nation or our NASCAR stuff. So we start out with trucks nationwide, and then we'll go to Sprint Cup after this.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, my comment on that, if I can comment on that, Brett, that's what I had on my mind. A lot of people say that, you know, I was on the Sirius XM Sunday night after the race with Clara B, and I got hung up on, so I don't know if I ruffled some feathers or what, but I was taking up for the old man, Morgan Shepherd. From what I gathered, which we didn't get that TV view till later on coming through the corner, but from what I've gathered and what I've seen, it looked like, you know, Morgan got down low, got out of the way, and Joey came around high, and it looked like Joey come down and tried to get a little bit of side draft on him, and that's when he pulled the car around. Now, that's just my take. I don't know if that's what y'all seen or not.
I guess we'll talk about that, but we'll probably bring it up later on for Justin. But, Kyle, your thoughts on that incident?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard both sides of it. You know, you heard Joey Logano's side and you heard Morgan Shepherd's side. Yeah, first, like I said, I was scratching my head a little bit. You know, I think Wally Dallenbach kind of said on the telecast, and why would a car 15 laps down be racing? I mean, at first I questioned it a little bit. But then, after the race, you know, somebody asked, I think it was Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson in the media center in the press conference about the about what happened about race with Morgan Shepherd, and they both said, you know, he looked like he was loose all day, you know, and pretty much what Tim was saying about, you know, maybe you know, he got side draft a little bit and just got looser, you know, because like I said, Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson were both saying that the 33 car was loose all day, so you know, I think it was just a racing accident, you know, and someone asked Kyle, and you know, when we bring up the subject of age limits, and Kyle Busch was like, don't even go there, you know, he was saying jokingly he'll be there until he's 65, you know, it was interesting, but I don't think NASCAR needs an age limit at all. I mean, you know, of course 18, I mean, I understand that, you know, with the Cup Series and Nationwide, I completely understand that, but, you know, when it, you know, it's a touchy subject, but, you know, I mean, with Morgan Shepherd, I mean, like I said, I think he just got loose. I think it was just a racing accident, in my opinion.
Glenn?
Yeah.
Glenn, you with us?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Glenn, your thoughts on the Morgan Shepherd incident in the Sprint Cup Series?
Oh, the Morgan Shepherd deal? I don't really have an opinion on one, because there's really two sides of the story, because if you watch back on the video, you know, people are probably saying, you know, oh, Shepherd came on the racetrack and it's on Logano. Well, at the same time, Logano was coming down the racetrack too. So it's a double-edged sword, and so really there's two sides to it, and really it was probably both their faults, and Logano just spouted off because that's what he does on some of these interviews, and I guess somebody got an email in the background.
Well, my opinion on this, and I know I'm kind of a moderator on here, and I don't really discuss the topics, but in my opinion, you know, Morgan Shepherd has every right to race. Logano has every right to race in the Sprint Cup Series. You know, NASCAR said after race that they did not warn Morgan Shepherd one time during the whole event. And, you know, it looked like there, from a lot of drivers talked about that, he was loose all day. And so, you know, and looking at the video, it looked to me like just a racing deal. You know, it could have happened to any of the other 41 other drivers out there. And so, you know, I don't think it was something to do with Morgan's ability. I think it was just a racing deal, and it could have happened to anybody.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Brett, if, you know, we're all right, you know, just you, we don't know because we wasn't in the car and we didn't get to see the whole video, you know, I mean, the whole shot after I say, you know, after they come out of three. And, you know, we don't know. Them two are the only two that you know, really know. But, I mean, you know, anyway, gentlemen, I want to thank y'all for letting me come on. I got a water sprinkler out in the yard. I got to go move. But, anyway, thank y'all again, and y'all doing a great job. I'll talk to y'all later.
Thank you for coming on, and it was certainly neat to hear, you know, some of your thoughts that you had, and please come on again, Tim.
Yes, sir, I will. Anytime, Brett. Thank you. Y'all have a good one. I'll talk to y'all later.
All right, we'll see you.
All right, bud. Bye.
All right, so that was Tim, who hosts the sister show to the Speedy Digest on Tuesdays, and you can hear that show live at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern on Tuesday night. All right, we're going to go into some NASCAR Nationwide Series news, as it was reported that this driver, which I kind of talked earlier about it, but didn't really get into much details, and that is Ryan Sieg, who picked up Unser for, I believe, a couple of races for this year, so a great deal for him. I'm trying to find it here on my iPad, but okay, so he picked up a two race sponsor and on his number 39 RSS Racing Chevrolet with Stanton Digital. Ryan Sieg has impressed me the last several Nationwide Series races, and even Dale Jr. as well commented of how well he has been doing lately in Nationwide Series and how he's been shocking him. And so, yeah, I'm going to start going this time. Your thoughts on that, and your thoughts on Ryan Sieg this year.
On Ryan Sieg? Ryan Sieg is certainly starting to, you know, make some noise down there. For one thing, he just needs a sponsorship for that 39 car, and, you know, he was able to get himself into the dash for cash, which is really good, and I think that's really what kind of, you know, gave him a little bit of attention. But really, what he needs to do is that team just needs to get a sponsorship so they can get some better equipment so they can continue with the, with, you know, finishing well.
Yeah, I think it's good morale for that team, you know, coming off that third place finish at Daytona, and also trying to go out there and you know, go for $100,000 in New Hampshire. It wasn't meant to be, but I think it's a good boost for that team. You know, I've been actually kind of surprised by their performance this year. You know, they've been, I mean, they're kind of middle of the pack with the rookie class, but you know, they're outperforming teams like Dakota Armstrong and other, you know, other teams, like especially that team in general. You know, because Dakota Armstrong is a full year of sponsorship, and he hasn't really shown anything for that team this year. So, you know, it's just been interesting, you know, that Ryan Sieg has been showing better results. And like I said, he was 18th at New Hampshire this weekend. And also, I think Dakota Armstrong was he was top 25 or top 30. So I think, you know, when you compare that, you know, more money to less money, you know, with what he's doing, for what he has, he's doing a pretty good job. So, you know, yeah, actually Dakota Armstrong was 30th. So, you know, I think with what Ryan Sieg has done so far, you know, they've had some decent runs. So I think, you know, they might be starting to come into a little of their own, and he needs to get some more experience on the Nationwide circuit. And I think he'll start to show some people that he does have the speed.
And we're going to move on to our next topic before we preview Chicago, and that is Eric Jones will be making his NASCAR Nationwide debate this weekend in the EnjoyIllinois.com 300 at Chicago and Speedway. And some details on this. I believe he's going to make two more stops later on. And so what is your thoughts starting with Kyle this time on Eric Jones making his debate this weekend?
Yeah, with Eric Jones, I mean, I think it's a good opportunity for him. He definitely has the talent to run a NASCAR. I mean, you've seen it last week, and you saw it last year at Phoenix in the Truck Series race. I mean, I saw him when he won the Snowball Derby before. So, you know, I think he definitely has the talent. And, you know, when he first ran a super speedway race in ARCA, I mean, he finished second at Pocono. I mean, that was pretty phenomenal. And he almost won the race. And he almost won Pocono again in ARCA in August. So I definitely think he has the talent to run the car. I'm going to be interested to see how he does this weekend. I'm still a little iffy about how he's going to do. I mean, I know he has all the confidence in the world, and you know, and it's different when you're going from trucks to Nationwide, though. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. So I think, you know, it's going to be an adjustment for him, but I think he may have a good run this weekend. You know, you've seen guys like Matt Kenseth, Darrell Wallace Jr., Kenny Hobble. You've seen guys run that car. So, I mean, it's possible he can have a good run this week. And they haven't cracked that. 20 team has not cracked victory lane just yet. But, you know, and also Sam Hornish Jr., if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, they definitely – that team has the speed, and they're close. So, I mean, you never know with Eric Jones, you know. I think it was his third or fourth or fifth truck start last year. So, you know, he could have a breakout race this weekend, you know, depending how fast he gets – accustomed to the Nationwide Series cars.
Dan?
Yeah, you know what? I got to agree with what Kyle was saying there for sure.
All right. And now we're going to preview Chicagoland Speedway this weekend for the Enjoy Illinois 300. There's a couple Sprint Cup Series drivers on the entry list. And so that's going to feature Jeffrey Earnhardt, but won't be surprised if they put Matt Devenito after the first pit stop in the number four, as Jeffrey has been recovering from a bike accident where he broke a couple ribs, and so he's still recovering from that. Casey Kane will run the number five. The six will be piloted by Trevor Bain. And then Blake Cook will run the number 10. Going down through the entry list here, as we just discussed, Eric Jones will be in the number 20. The number 22 will be driven by Ryan Blaine. The number 23 is Robert Richardson Jr. The 25 will run this weekend with John S. Talley, and Zachary's is a sponsorship. J.J. Yaley will pilot the number 28. Dion Sosnowski will run the number 31. Kale Conley will return to the number 33. Kyle Robinson will be in the number 42. David Starr will pilot the number 44. Sam Hornish Jr. will be back in the number 54 for Kyle Busch Motorsports. Derek Pope will run the number 70. The number 72 car of Kyle Long. And Kevin LePage will be back in the number 74. Chad Boat will make his return for another attempt to make the race in the number 80. Richard Harriman will pilot the number 87. Mike Harmon will drive the number 93 JGL Racing Dodge. And so it should be an interesting race this weekend. And now we're going to move over into the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, where we review the race from this past weekend over there. And we saw some interesting stuff over there as we talked about the Joe Logano and the Morgan Shepherd deal. And during that race, you saw a green light checkered finish where they ran 305 laps instead of the scheduled 301. Keselowski led a total of 7 different times for 130 total laps to capture a victory in the 22nd annual Camping World RV Show 301. Finishing in second was also the same driver that finished second in the NASCAR Nationwide Series race the day before, and that was Kyle Busch. Finishing third was another solid finish by a rookie driver, Kyle Larson. Fourth, Matt Kenseth. Fifth, Ryan Newman. Sixth, Clint Bowyer. Seventh, Tony Stewart. Eighth, Denny Hamlin. Ninth, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. And finishing 10th was Dale Earnhardt Jr. There are 7 cautions for 35 laps under yellow. The first one of those involving Jimmy Johnson in the turn number 1 as he blew the tire. And then on lap 113, we saw another caution for debris in turn 3, but I also believe that it was the second incident involving Jimmy Johnson, but that one, the first one didn't bring out a caution. Now on lap 154, we saw another yellow for debris on the back straightaway. And then on lap 178, we saw debris in turn number 1. On lap 213 was the incident involving the number 22 of Joe Logano and the number 33 of Morgan Shepherd. Saw another yellow for debris in turn number 3. Then at 299, we saw the number 51 spin in turn number 4, which brought out the caution that sent us into overtime. And there's 18 lead changes among 9 different drivers during the event. And no cars failed to qualify for the race. So I start with Glenn this time. Glenn, what did you think of the race?
Well, you know what? It was rather tame, and also seeing Brad Keselowski sweep the races was really kind of neat. For one thing, I noticed is that it was really 1.5 crews of racing. You know, that top lane just wouldn't come in during the race, and even during restarts, the only time when the top lane was working just fine was just during the restart going into turn 1.
Kyle? Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I wasn't thrilled about the racing on Sunday, you know, but I give all credit to Brad Keselowski. You know, that 2 team was hooked up. That car was hooked up the entire race. After that first pit stop early on, they stole the show. I mean, they were just – nobody was beating them. And, you know, I know Kyle Busch gave it a chance in the end, but he had no chance at all. I mean, he gave it all he got, but just, you know, it was just – that's how good that team was. And that team, I think, is right now is almost at their prime. You know, I mean, I'm thinking about it right now. The 3 best cars out there are the 48, the 2, and the 22. So I think right now when you think about it, you know, with the performance Brad Keselowski on Sunday, I mean, you know, he's had good luck in that Red Apple Ale car. You know, he almost won Pocono until the whole, the whole debris on the grill thing trying to get it off. And then, you know, he went out, dominated, and won on Sunday. So I think with, you know, I mean – you know, late caution made things interesting, you know, with the wreck with Justin Allgaier and David Reagan. But, you know, with Brad Keselowski, he could just do no wrong on Sunday, and he showed it. And that team is probably close to where they were, not last year, but back in 2012, even though they were with Dodge. You know, they've taken, you know, it's their second year back with Ford, Penske, that is. And, you know, they've really shown that they have the speed. And, you know, you saw it at Kentucky, just absolutely annihilated the field. You know, it didn't matter where he restarted. Same thing on Sunday. I mean, he was 7th on a restart, 10th on a restart. He just drove right up to the field and right back to the lead. So, you know, I think right now that 2 team is definitely on a roll.
I agree totally. And so after that, the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series is off this weekend, but we got some news packages to bring along with you guys. My first one is NASCAR schedules a test at Michigan International Speedway the day after a race. This test is something similar like what NASCAR did back in December or late last year where they ran a few test races for the 2014 package. And kind of give us your thoughts, and this time I'm going to start with Glenn.
All right, so 2015 rule packet, or I mean the 2015 rule packet. I just hope that whatever they're going to test with this car is that they need to make some big changes with this thing because even though you know the looks need to be changed a little bit, but they need to make this so that it runs better at Daytona and Talladega. They need to do some work on the front end a little bit, but. Other than that, I'm actually kind of interested to see what they're going to do with these new changes.
Kyle? Yeah, pretty much the same thing. I'm just wondering, you know, with what the racing is going to be like, if these changes do happen, you know, how is the racing, at least for me, the thing that I'm going to be interested to see is how the racing is going to be on those mile-and-a-half tracks. You know, I mean, Kentucky was not a good race. I mean, and that, like I said, that track is not made for cup cars, and I will keep saying that because it's not. You know, like I said, I mean, that kind of was a big, you know, that was kind of I thought Sunday's race was better than Kentucky, honestly. But, you know, but back to, like, the mile-and-a-half tracks, I mean, I'd like to see some better racing there. With these rule changes help them at all. You know, make the cars being able to pass more. You know, I haven't seen on those mile-and-a-half tracks yet this year. It doesn't matter whether it was Vegas or Charlotte or Texas. It's just, it's weird. You know, I haven't seen the passing, and I'm interested to see how that's going to happen and, you know, what will happen in 2015 with all these tracks, and even the super speedway short tracks and all the tracks around, see how this will how it will happen for next year.
I agree with you there, and should be interesting what NASCAR comes up with. And the next topic over in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series is NASCAR introduces some new paint schemes for the Chase Contenders, and these teams can run at the Chase Open at the Chicagoland Speedway. But here's the catch: once the car is eliminated, then the paint scheme for the Chase must come off. And you know, this involves the roof, the roof number, I should say, the windshield strip, the front valance, as we like to call it, and you'll see the NASCAR Chase for the Sprint Cup 2014 in the place of the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series detail on the contingency panel. And, you know, they look kind of, I think they're going to look great. You know, one of the things I kind of wish they were surprised that they did not do was make it to be a yellow spoiler on the car, but you know, I'm kind of shocked that they didn't do that. But I think you know, from what I saw of it, you know, they look pretty slick and that kind of feeling. So this time I'm going to start with Glenn for his thoughts.
Well, I guess that the new like livery idea would be okay for like the newer fans who didn't know about what the Chase was or even who the Chase drivers were, but really it's going to kind of screw up a few people, because here's the problem: there's a couple of cars that are currently not in the Chase and kind of like run towards mid pack or towards the rear that already have yellow numbers on the top, and you know, there's even a couple of drivers who already have yellow numbers. I mean, look at Jeff Gordon. He has yellow numbers on the top of his car. Look at Greg Biffle. He has yellow numbers. Even look at Joey Logano. They're going to have to, you know, change a few things on Logano's car because if he ends up in the Chase, then Logano can't have yellow numbers on top of a yellow roof if he's got the Pennzoil car. If it's the AAA car, no problem. But if anybody has a yellow paint scheme coming into the Chase races and they have the yellow numbers, it's going to cause a little confusion.
Kyle?
Yeah, Glenn, I didn't even think about that with the yellow numbers. I mean, that does make sense. But I don't think it's a bad idea. You know, I mean, when you bring in the yellow numbers thing that the drivers already have, that some of them have, that's not very good when I think of that. I know you tweeted something, Glenn, about it being like the Noble 5, like back in the day when they used to have the red numbers and, you know, for the cars that could run for $1 million. I mean, I like that. That reminded me a lot of that, and I kind of like that idea. Something I found interesting, though, when I read about the whole new chase thing with that happening was, you know, once a driver gets eliminated from the chase, that yellow number goes away, you know, when they go down from, you know, when they go from 16 to 12 to 8 and then to 4. That, you know, each, whatever, three races, that when a driver gets eliminated, that, you know, that their chase, yellow chase bumper and number goes away. So I found that pretty interesting. But, I mean, I think it's an interesting thing just to have the cars, try to distinguish the cars out there who's in the chase. I mean, I don't think it matters to me, honestly. But, you know, that's ever what NASCAR's up to. You know, we've had, I know who's been in the chase, and I think the drivers know who are in the chase as well, usually, the other drivers who are not in the chase. So, I mean, it's an interesting thing to start, you know, with just to distinguish, you know, who's in the chase and who's not on the track. So, you know, like you say with the newer fans, they don't know. So, you know, so they know who is on the track and who's in the chase.
And, you know, I know that, you know, I don't think it really matters, but I know some of those racing teams, you know, this is going to be interesting when it comes down to their super speedway cars because, you know, as we all know, and actually I have a contingency panel I'm not going to name the driver, but I have a contingency panel from Daytona and Talladega, and many teams will put varnish or a clear coat like 8 times to make sure the car is slick and stuff, and so there's no decal, you know, edges where they say, well, you know, it slows down the car. Whether it does or not, I don't know, but you know, it's going to be interesting, you know, because you're not going to want to do that until you know that you're going to make that round for Talladega, whichever it is in. So, you know, that might be kind of interesting how you might do that. But yeah, you know, I think, and this is also a way, you know, for them to make diecasts, you know, that are special for the chase and make a little bit more money on that for you guys that diecast people, but yeah, you know, it's definitely interesting. Okay, this was not reported by the team, but MRN kind of broke the news that Ty Dillon will make his NASCAR Sprint Cup Series debate at the Atlanta Motor Speedway, providing the signed sponsorship. Dillon will pilot the number 33 car for Joe Fett, which is not a car owned by RCR, but is in a technical alliance with Richard Childress Racing. And if they find sponsorship, they will run him in the car. He is also scheduled to test there later on, early next month. And I'm going to start with Kyle on this one. Scott?
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, I think Atlanta's a good track for Ty Dillon to make his Cup debut at. He's had success there before. He actually won the last truck race there in 2012. And actually, it'd be Kyle Busch for that victory. So, you know, he typically runs well on those worn-out racetracks like Kentucky, like Atlanta. He runs good at those tracks, especially he did in the truck series, both winning at both those tracks. So I think it's good for Ty Dillon to start at a track like Atlanta. You know, he's had experience there. He can say he's run well there. And, you know, I think it's good for him to run a track like that. When you think about it, like I said, it's a good track for him to start at. Cause like I said, with him running so good at Atlanta. And you know, he's run good, like I said, at Kentucky track, somewhere, and also I think California too. So, you know, I mean, when you have those worn out racetracks, you know, like I think Kyle Larson, another driver, said, you know, he's good at worn out racetracks. He said at the Pocono test back in May. So I think for Ty Dillon, this is good just to get his feet wet in a race and, you know, in a cup race and, you know, and kind of see what the next level is like.
Yeah. I'm actually interested to see how well Ty Dillon is going to do once again. You know, these types of tracks are pretty much in his wheelhouse. So, you know, we'll see. happens with two Dillons out there in the Cup Series.
All right, and Turner hoping Joseph would be on, but now we're down to our final topic before we head over into Glenn's open wheel report, which I'll also let Kyle join in that discussion too. But this big story hit news waves, I believe it was on Monday, and I haven't really read about it, you know, had a chance to sit down and go through it, but NASCAR teams, which mainly was the multi-car teams, that formed a alliance with one another called the Race Team Alliance, I think is what RTA is the acronym for, and that's pretty interesting. A lot of people say it's a union. They say it's not. NASCAR said that if they wanted to, if the teams wanted to talk NASCAR about that, they would have to go to one of their lawyers to talk about it. And also same way with IFC, which is International Speedway Corporation. And then also Burton Smith is on NASCAR's side about it. I'm going to start with Glenn on this. You know, you probably know more about it than I do since I was gone all last week. But give us your thoughts on this, and is it good or bad for the sport? Can you just give us your thoughts a bit on the RTA?
Oh, the ARCA thing?
RTA, the Race Team Alliance thing.
Oh, yes. That's a very controversial topic. For some reason, it sounds really muffled on my line, so it's like I can't even, you know, pick up the cues and all that kind of stuff, but yeah, this brand new union, I'll tell you one thing. This could be both good and bad. I mean, I know that NASCAR is none too happy about it. And I know that, you know, probably some of the fans are not too happy. But I don't know how long these guys are going to last. I mean, it's a bigger team, but who knows? Maybe this union might end up, you know, being good for the sport.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, I read an article about Bob Pocker saying about that. You know, it's just that there's I still think it's very complicated. You know, I'm not really sure what to think of it. I mean, I've read a little bit into it, but you know, with the whole thing. But you know, I know NASCAR said something about it. Mike Helton said something about it. You know, there's really no animosity toward the owners for that. But I mean, I'm going to be interested to see what happens in these next, you know, with what's going on with the RTA. Because like I said, I really didn't look into it, honestly. I didn't really look into it. So, you know, I know there's been a lot of people, you know, there's been both sides of it. You've heard the writers, they've said what they've said, and you've heard what the owners have said. So, I mean, I still have a lot of questions about it still.
Yeah, I mean,
and,
RTA
has joined us. So, Josiah, we are discussing about the RTA, and give us your thoughts.
I just think that the RTA is a good idea, but at the same time, the owners have to be really, really careful. I mean, they're making International Speedway Corporation go through lawyers to talk to the owners. They're making NASCAR go through lawyers to talk to the owners. Actually, not lawyers, attorneys, rather. And I just think that they need to be really careful because this could be either amazing for a sport or it could be terrible. But what I have a problem with is if you're going to lower costs for teams, at the same time, you have to lower the costs for the fans. I was just talking to Kyle yesterday about this. I had to pay $300 for a rinky-dink $50 hotel. I mean, that's just ridiculous to go to a NASCAR race to pay $300 for two nights. I'm sure the teams get a discount as it is already, because there's at least, even for the smaller teams, there are at least 10 guys at the track every single weekend staying in a hotel room. So you know what? I don't know what they're doing, to be honest. I don't think many people do. It's very secretive, this program. I think it's going to work out for the better, but at the same time, they need to be very careful.
I agree. And, yeah, I think this is definitely going to be interesting to follow, you know, as more questions are answered on it, and, you know, it's certainly going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And now
I just think that the biggest thing, what they need to tell people is, what is their specific goal? If they had more of a specific goal instead of just saying, oh, we want more of the same parts and pieces for cheaper prices, okay, you want that. That's good. But let's hear what those parts are. I know for a fact part of that is shocks, because shocks are going ridiculously high on prices, and the lower teams, that's a big part of why they're not competitive. But that's how the sport has always been, and a big part of this is going to be making sure the lower teams aren't cut out of the sport. And that's a big concern to have lower teams not involved in this. You only have 9 teams in it. I did a mid-season report card for every single full-time Spring Cup Series team. There are about, I would say, 15 or so full-time teams, approximately at least. And not all of them are included in this. JTG Daughtry Racing, they're not included in this, but they're a top 25 team on a weekly basis. You know what? I find this very iffy. There are a lot of questions to be raised, as you said, and I think it's our job as the media to figure this out, and eventually we will.
I agree totally. And now I'm going to turn the podcast over to the great Glenn Locke for the open wheel portion. So take it away, Glenn.
All righty. Well, obviously, we didn't have a show last week, and so we'd go back a little ways. We'd go back to the British Grand Prix that the F1 series raced. The Santander British Grand Prix was the last F1 race, and another dominating win for Lewis Hamilton. He started 6th on the grid and ended up leading the majority of the race, and, everybody enjoyed the win because, you know, he is from Great Britain. So, let's go to the finish in order and see what your favorite driver finished. And there was also a ton of penalties that were issued to some of these drivers before the race. Lewis Hamilton won, Valtteri Bottas and the Williams Mercedes came home to a podium, 2nd place. And Daniel Ricciardo routed out the podium spots in the Red Bull Renault. Jenson Button finished 4th, Sebastian Vettel 5th, Fernando Alonso 6th, Kevin Magnussen finishing 7th, Nico Hülkenberg 8th, Daniel Kvyat finishing 9th, and Jean-Éric Vergne rounds out the top 10. Further on back he goes, Sergio Perez finished 11th, Roman Grosjean finished 12th, Adrian Sutil 13th, Jules Bianchi in the Marussia finished 14th, Kamui Kobayashi in the Caterham finished 15th, Max Chilton 16th, 17th, it's Pastor Maldonado, he fell out of the race due to his exhaust failure. And here are the cars that failed to finish the race, Nico Rosberg, who just this morning signed a multi-year deal with Mercedes, retired after a gearbox failure. Marcus Ericsson in the Caterham Renault had suspension damage. Esteban Gutierrez was involved in an accident on lap 9. And Kimi Raikkonen and Felipe Massa round out the field. They were involved in a very big crash at the beginning of the race. So, here are some of the penalties. Esteban Gutierrez did qualify 14th, but had to take a 15 grid spot penalty. 10 for an unsafe release, and then an extra 5 for a gearbox change. Chilton qualified 13th, but dropped down 5 grid spots due to a gearbox change. Also, Pastor Maldonado was excluded from qualifying due to a fuel infringement. And also, Marcus Ericsson and Kamui Kobayashi failed to meet the Q1 100% rule requirement, so they raced at the steward's discretion. And before anybody is going to say, what, about that rule, wherein that F1 has a rule where you have to be within 107% of the fastest driver's time in order to race in the field. If you don't take any time or you don't meet within there, then you have to go to the stewards and ask, you know, hey, we want to race. And most of the time they will say yes, but there are a couple of times where they might say no, and then you're pretty much screwed. So that's how the rule goes. Once again, congratulations to Lewis Hamilton, winning once again. And so the next race that we have coming up is going to be this weekend. This weekend, F1 invades the country that recently won the World Cup over Argentina. It is the German Grand Prix, the Formula One Grosser Perez Santander von Duschenlen 2014 at the Hockenheim Ring. This 17-turn road course is a very, very tricky one. And if you've ever played this on, like let's say, Torque Free or even race this on any of the F1 games, this is a very treacherous track. Turn 2 is a very sharp apex, and also Turn 6 is a very sharp apex, too. So you want to make sure that your car is going to work just fine. 67 laps are going to make up the running, and the lap record here was set by Kimi Raikkonen at a 113.780. That was back in 2004, and I believe that there will be two DRS activation zones. One should be coming out of Turn 4, going down the long back straightaway. The other one should be on the front stretch coming out of Turn 17 and going into Turn number 1. So I believe that is where we're going to have the DRS activation zones and areas. And so we will have a pick for that F1 race later on in the show. So now, here we go. It's not only a doubleheader this weekend, but we also got a doubleheader in IndyCar races. Two weeks ago, the IndyCar series invaded the Pocono Raceway for possibly the final time. In their campaign. The Pocono IndyCar 500, we do not have the highlight reel for this, but I will tell you that somebody got their first win in quite a long time, and that was Juan Pablo Montoya. That's right, Montoya led a 1-2 Penske finish to win the Pocono IndyCar 500. Now, Kyle, I believe, was at the race and was in the middle of a whole crowd. So before we take a look at the finishing order, Kyle, what did you think of the race, and also what did you see from your seat?
Kyle had to leave early.
Oh, all right. Then we'll get his feedback later on. All right. So now we'll go into the finishing order and see who your favorite driver finished. Juan Pablo Montoya was the winner. Elio Castaneda finished second. Carlos Munoz got himself another podium. Ryan Briscoe finished fourth. Scott Dixon fifth. Simon Pagenaud, Mikhail Leishman finished 7th, Joseph Newgarden 8th, Marco Andretti 9th, and Will Power rounded out the top 10 spots. I'm just going to cherry pick a few drivers here. The SB Driver of the Year, Ryan Hunter-Reay, finished 18th. Sebastian Bourdais finished 16th. Three cars failed to finish the race. Graham Ray Hall, Carlos Huertas, and Takuma Sato all for electrical failure. Jack Cockworth, unfortunately, did not start the race because in a practice crash back on Saturday, Cockworth slammed the wall and unfortunately sustained a bruised heart. So he was not cleared to drive, and the 98 team did not have a backup car because the car was too smashed up, and they wanted to focus primarily on Iowa and Canada. So they unfortunately withdrew from the race, so there was an empty spot on the grid. So now we leave Pocono, and now we head over to Iowa for some more fun racing, the Iowa Indy Corn 300. So how about we go ahead and get that race started. Now, everybody knows that there was going to be rain all weekend long. And it didn't affect the Truck Series race in any way, shape, or form, but it did affect this IndyCar race. So let's begin. Scott Dixon and Tony Kanaan, the Ganassi drivers, started 1-2, and to a great crowd on hand, the green flag flew, and Scott Dixon and Tony Kanaan were still in safe car formation as they went into turn number 1. Three wide racing as Marco Andretti started to make some moves back there. There was a lot of three-wide action. And I'll tell you one thing. If you think Bristol is fast in a cup car, Iowa is sort of like IndyCar at Bristol in a way, except that you can't really bump and bang, but you can run too wide into the corners. Meanwhile, Marco Andretti, who was trying to make some moves to the front, started falling back a little bit as he had to give a spot away to Ryan Briscoe. That was a battle for the third position. And he would give another one away to Ed Carpenter. That would be a battle for fifth. So everybody is having a grand time here. And now Elio Castroneves is moving up through the field. And then a little trouble as the yellow flag comes out due to rain. And this would prompt a 29-minute red flag. Teams could work on their cars. Actually, could not work on their cars, excuse me. But the drivers could change their visors. They could do all kinds of different things. And the good news was that the rain went away, and we got the track dried fairly quickly. We could get back out there. So once they withdrew the red flag and we had the yellow flag out, pit stops took place, and Elio Castroneves leapfrogged the Ganassi crew and was able to take the race lead on pit road. So now let's get these cars back underway. Green flag. Green flag came back out to restart the race on lap 48. And there's trouble in the back of the pack as Mikhail Elishan and Takuma Sato crash. This is very similar to what happened back at Iowa, but here's what happened to them. One of the cars, I believe it was Mikhail Elishan, got on the gas and just spun out right in front of Takuma Sato and took both of them out. And, of course, A.J. Foyt was none too happy about that. So another DNF for the young Russian and the young Japanese men. Meanwhile, later on in the race, Elio has now lost the lead to Scott Dixon and Tony Kanaan, but guess what? Brazil will be cheering super loud because here comes Tony Kanaan to the bottom of Scott Dixon to take over the race lead once again, and he would go on to dominate this race in the later part of the race. And then then some more trouble came a little bit later on in the race, as Marco Andretti's engine would suddenly let go as well. So tough break for Marco. That is yet another blown engine for him. And then trouble for Juan Pablo Montoya, who was the Pocono 500 winner. He ends up getting loose under Ed Carpenter and ends up smacking the wall pretty hard. Now, in the video, it looks like that Ed Carpenter came down on Juan Pablo Montoya. Others say that he got loose. I'll let you be the judge of it. And of course, Juan Pablo was none too happy with Ed Carpenter and showed his displeasure by just simply waving his arms at him. He had his helmet in hand, but thank goodness he did not chuck it. So now we get to later on in the race. So as a matter of fact, this happens so close to the end that a couple of cars come in to take four tires. And one of those cars is Ryan Hunter-Reay, as he is able to drive up to the back bumper of Tony Kanaan, and with two laps of racing to go, take him to the inside. And this would give the win to Ryan Hunter-Reay, who just an hour ago was given the ESPY for the best driver of 2014. And so that caps off his win there, and also the win at the Iowa Corn Indy 300. So an amazing win for Ryan Hunter-Reay, the Indianapolis 500 champ as well. And this will be another great win for the Andretti Autosport team. So stay with the finishing order and see where your favorite driver finished in the Iowa Corn Indy 300. Ryan Hunter-Reay was, of course, the winner. Joseph Newgarden finished second. Great podium for him. And a dejected Tony Kanaan finished third. I mean, it looked like in the interview he was about ready to cry. But you know what? Tony Kanaan is a tough driver, and I bet you that he'll probably win one of the races coming up here this weekend. Scott Dixon finished fourth. Ed Carpenter fifth. James Hinchcliffe finished. Graham Rahal finished seventh. Elio Castroneves eighth. Ryan Briscoe ninth. Good top ten finish for him. And his teammate Charlie Kimball round out the top ten. Don Pagano finished 11th. Carlos Munoz finished 12th. 13th, Justin Wilson. 14th, Will Power. 15th, Jack Hawksworth. And here were the cars that fell out of the race. Juan Pablo Montoya, Sebastian Saavedra, Marco Andretti, Sebastian Bourdais. Carlos Fuentes fell out of the race due to driver illness. I'm not sure what was making him sick. And then, of course, Mikhail Elishan and Takuma Sato. So once again, congratulations to Ryan Hunter-Reay. And the point stands right now, Elio Castroneves has a very slim lead over Will Power. In fact, let's go ahead and take a look at the points really quickly, so we can so you can see who's going to be in the running for this championship. Elio's first in points with a teammate Will Power in second place. Ryan Hunter-Reay bumps himself to third. Fourth is Simon Pagenaud. Fifth is Juan Pablo Montoya. Carlos Suertes is sixth. Seventh is Marco Andretti. Eighth is Scott Dixon. Ninth is Ryan Briscoe. And Tony Kanaan is starting to show himself in the 10th spot. As a matter of fact, he bumped out James Hinchcliffe, who was going to try and get himself back up into the top 10, because guess what, folks? This weekend, we're back to some fun three-course racing. It's the 1.75-mile track in Toronto, Canada, the Honda Indy Toronto doubleheader. This 11-turn, 1.7-mile circuit, which offers great views of downtown Toronto, is tight and has led to cars attempting to squeeze past each other in turns. Many times, only one makes it unscathed. There's a long front stretch leading to the turn one of Apprentice Gate, a hard right-hander, and it's a great place for overtaking. Last year, Scott Dixon dominated both races. Both of them had a rolling start because, unfortunately, they botched the standing start. So we will have a standing start once again in the race. I believe it's race number one, and then race number two will be a rolling start. So hopefully we can get this going on. The weather there is going to be just fantastic. And so now we will have picks for that a little bit later on in the show. So without further delay, I think that's actually it for the open wheel report.
All right. We'll take it over to Glenn also for the pick portion.
That's right. All right, so we have four races to pick from. Unfortunately, since Kyle had to leave the show, he's going to have to either text me his picks or send it to me in a picture. But let's start things off in the F1 series. Let's start it off here with, you know, who's hot and who's not at Germany. Basically, Sebastian Vettel and Nico Rosberg, the two Germans are going to be hard to beat at this track. And so I don't know what's going to happen for this race, but those are definitely the two that are going to be hard to beat. But also the Ferrari and also the McLarens have done pretty well here too. So let's go ahead, and since there's only the two of us here, we'll go ahead and alternate. So that means Brett is going to lead us off.
Oh, starting on one?
Yeah, this is F1.
Okay. I think I'm going to go with this one driver has been hot here lately. And, I think he's going to do really well. I'm going to go with the Mercedes car of Lewis Hamilton.
Ooh, Lewis Hamilton for you. Okay. If I can get the pen to work here. Come on, there we go. Okay, so Hamilton for you. Okay, so for me, what the heck am I going to pick, or who the heck am I going to pick? See here, there's definitely some good drivers that can be taken, but I think for this one, he's been doing so well. I'm going to take a risk here. I'm going to go with Valtteri Bottas. All right, so I got Valtteri Bottas, and Brett has Lewis Hamilton. So I move on to the IndyCar series, and once again, this is a doubleheader. So once again, if you make your IndyCar pick, you can even use it for the second race too, if you so chose. So now, let's go ahead and go with race number one here, and this time I will start off the pick, and I think, as I said, Scott Dixon is going to be a hard one to be out there. So I think for this first race, I'll go ahead and take Dixie. So Scott Dixon for me. There we are. Okay, and so Brett, go ahead. This is for race number one.
Yeah, the longest driver is usually does well on road courses. And I'm going to go with Helio Castroneves.
Ooh, going Castroneves again. That's right. Okay, so, right, how about we spell the name right? There we go. So, Helio Castroneves for Brett, and I have Scott Dixon. Now I move on to race number two, and we'll alternate again, because now it's going to be Brett's turn.
All right, for race number two, I'm going to go with Mikhail Aleshin.
Whoa, okay, so Mikhail Aleshin. All right, so I think that he will definitely turn his luck around here. So let's get his name in there, Mikhail Aleshin. All right, for me, little hard to think, but probably in the second race, this driver is going to do just fine. So I think we're going to take Willpower for the second race. So we'll do a little Dixon Power action there. So I got Willpower, and Brett has Mikhail Aleshin. Now I move on to the Nationwide Series race, the EnjoyIllinois.com 300, coming at you live from the Chicagoland Speedway. There are 41 drivers on the entry list, only one Cup Series driver in this race, and that is Casey King. Does anybody take that?
There's two drivers on the entry list.
Oh, who's the second? Oh, Kyle Larson. Okay, I did not see him. So Kyle Larson is the other driver that is also on this. So let's see. Why don't we go ahead and have you pick? Actually, it'll be me since you picked for race number two first. All right, who am I going to take for this Nationwide Series race? You know what? I know it's his first Nationwide Series race, but he's in that 20 car. And a lot of times, first drivers do pretty well, but I don't think I'm going to take Eric Jones. I'm going to take Ryan Blaney in car 22. So Ryan Blaney for me. Hopefully I don't get a visit from Brett because hopefully I did not steal his pick.
You did not. I think this weekend, is definitely going to be an interesting Nationwide Series race. You know, there's several drivers on here that are definitely worth choosing. But I think I'm going to take Eric Jones. He's a free pick, pretty much, and so we're still limited. But, I'm just going to take him. So I'm going to take Eric Jones.
All right, well, that sounds good. So I have Ryan Blaney, and Brett has Eric Jones. Now, before we go into our final spots, I actually want to go ahead and actually bring this up, because next week the Camping World Truck Series will be back at the Eldora Speedway to try the dirt race again. And the problem is that right as we're going on the air, I believe that's when the race begins.
We're going to move the show next week to Thursday, I believe.
Okay, that should work brilliantly for me. So you hear that, folks? Next week we are not broadcasting on Wednesday because
it'll either be Monday or Thursday, one of those two.
Yeah,
we haven't really decided
yet. It's either going to be Monday or Thursday. More likely, it could end up being Thursday or it could end up being Monday. I don't know. We'll keep you guys posted. So without further delay, now we can go into our final thoughts, and I'll go ahead
Hold on.
Oh, yeah, right
we
here.
We have picks for our racing series this weekend as well. As they'll be off for the Ansel Active Armor 150 for Arca Racing Series presented by Menards. Several drivers on the entry list include James Swanson in car 0, Thomas Prado in car number 2, Josh Williams in car 6, Thomas Tunley in car 15, Bill Catina will be in car 18 with Tom Birdie in car 20. Austin Wayne Self will be in car 22. Spencer Gallagher in car 23. Justin Boston will be in car 25. Some other notables on the entry list. I'm just reading the notables here. Fred Kimmel will, of course, drive the number 44. Matt Back in the number 52. Andrew Ranger will be in the number 53. Cody Coughlin will be in the number 55. Leonie Muntner will drive the number 66 car. Chris Bailey will pilot the number 68. Will Kimmel will be in the number 69. Tom Hester will drive the number 77. Justin Allison will drive the number 88. Graham Finger, who has won the first several events of the 2014 season, will pilot the number 9 car. Mason Mitchell will run the number 98 car as well. And those are just some of the few notables on the entry list. So I can't remember who went first last time. I think I went first. So we will go to Glenn for his ARCA Racing Series pick first.
Oh, boy. Okay. well, all right. I know some of the drivers in the field, and I'm just going to pick very blindly here, but let's see. They're going to be at Chicagoland Speedway. I guess I'll go with Spencer Gallagher.
Okay. And, you know, I think who I'm going to go with, you know, this driver is going to get a win soon. We talked about him earlier. I'm going to go with Mason Mitchell.
Okay. So now, is that out of the way. So now I guess we can go ahead and go ahead and go to our final spot. So, anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at IndyCarGL2048 and also on Facebook. My link is over there too. And, you know, good luck to everybody's picks, and it should be a great, great, great time.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at @NASCAR_Brett, or show me on Facebook at Brett Mann. Hope everyone has a great week. Hopefully I don't break any more iPads or my phone or anything like that. But hope everyone has a great evening. It was a lot of fun, and talk to you all next Monday or Thursday, whichever decides. So hope everyone has a great week, and good night, everyone.